Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have an episode with Vanessa Lapointe. How are you, Vanessa?
Doing great, Jane. How are you?
I am good. We are 22 minutes late. I think we've had a myriad of issues, mainly on my end. And Vanessa's been very patient with me. Thank you so much, Vanessa.
Always a pleasure.
We met at the Maggie Dent conference when Vanessa and Maggie did their tour. It was an incredible night. I had so much fun and I learned a lot. So I have been holding one topic for Vanessa since I met you at the event, and that is around that grief that some mums feel when maybe parenting, motherhood looks different than what we thought it would, or we have a different child to we expect, and that can be a real process. So for example, when I met my husband, I had a pretty strong sense of knowing that we were going to end up together. He may not have felt the same, but that was how I felt. And just up the road in an apartment that we were living was a beautiful spot with a brick shit house. And we were just looking at that and we thought, one day, if we ever have enough money, would we ever be able to live there? And when we had three kids under five, we were on a date and I had a couple of glasses of champagne. We finally saw the owners inside the house. It's like a holiday house. We could never find the numbers to make an offer or anything like that. I door knocked these older people in their 80s and convinced them to let us buy their house. We negotiated it completely ourselves and we couldn't believe it when we moved in. The surf club is across the road. There was a good public school behind us, the shopping center. And I thought to myself, this is all of my dreams come true. Like, this is it. And my husband and I have got really not a lot of shared interests except the beach. And as soon as we got there, it became very clear to me that my daughter was not going to be able to survive the public school behind us. It was about 100 meters away. And that all of my children have got sensory issues with sand and water and they hate the beach. We took them to Nippers and they absolutely hate it. And it seemed like things that we were interested in doing, like surfing, on the water, I suppose felt like it was completely out of possibility because our children hate the beach and still do. And so we ended up having to leave the public school, move to two different schools. We've obviously out the back here in Acreage because they all love animals, which is not anything I've ever been interested in. I've never had a pet before. And we now rehabilitate. We've got 17 birds, two snakes, turtles, all of these animals, which is not my dream. And my husband and I looked at each other the other day and we just said, how have we got this? And there's been a real period of grief for us. So we had to move away from all of our friends and our family to go to the only public school regionally that was small enough that I felt like my children would cope with. And I was wondering, do you hear these types of stories often?
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of us are sold a line or buy into a story idea of how life is meant to go. And we're kind of socialized in such a way that we believe, you know, those things are meant to come true. And there's this beautiful line from Carl Jung, who, you know, is an incredible contributor to our understanding of the human mind. And the translation of that line is, the greatest burden that any child will ever carry is the unlived life of the parent. And there's a number of ways, of course, to interpret it. But one of them is that, like, we come into parenthood with our collective history and all of the stories that follow us from that history. And so we have children and we think, we know how this is going to go. And we want to revisit upon our children all of the things that we love and all of the dreams that we carry. And then we soon are brought to our knees often in the realization that that's not actually how it goes down. How it goes down is our children come to us. And whilst sometimes that'll just be easy peasy and we'll have wake up calls in other areas of our life, not necessarily our children. But for many of us, and I suspect many of the people who listen to your podcast are part of this group where they would really feel like that's not how it's gone, that their children have actually come to them to wake them up. And in so doing, there will be, you know, like a little bit of a grind and things will feel challenging as you work to understand who is this child. There's this beautiful line from Shefali Sabari, a colleague of mine, and she says that every child is born throbbing with their own unique signature. And it is our job to honor that signature, honor their heart's intent, honor who it is that child actually is, as opposed to the one that we were sort of hoping we would get.
Just, I love it. It's just like hoping the one that we would get. And yeah, what you think you're going to get, it's kind of like shopping. When you think, oh, I haven't had my first child, I'm pregnant, my child won't be like that. That, you know, that's because they give it too much iPads or they do too much sugar. My child won't be that. And right. When I was in the shops the other day, I was thinking, my children are definitely worse than the ones that I thought that I wouldn't get. Like, I'm now that person by far. And then I'm just like, yeah, throw it in the trolley because I've got no will to live. Like, that's fine. I don't care at this point. Chuck it in. Yeah, I used to look at those mums and think, why are they so lazy? Like, why are they so, they just look like they're half dead. And I am now zombie through the trolley. Like, yep, put it in the trolley. Yep, looks good. Let's get more Tim Tams.
More Tim Tams. That's it. We all do our best parenting before we have our children.
Oh, I feel so hilarious. Okay, so then there is that kind of quiet guilt that kind of sets in when a mom or a parent realizes, I don't really recognize this version of motherhood. And I thought that I would be different. How can we kind of start to work through some of that grief? Because sometimes I do feel like a deep element of shame that I'm kind of like, well, why can't I have the child that can go to the public school, that will go to Nippers? Some of my friends have had those children, full families, living the lives I thought that I would live. And we all started prep together. Why have I not got that? Yeah. And it does make me angry and sad all at once, even though, you know, we are 4 years from that.
Yeah. You know, I love this line. I think it comes from A Course in Miracles. And the line is that we are never upset for the reasons we think. And what's interesting is that all of us come into this thing called life. And, you know, usually within our first 6 to 8 years, we've onboarded a whole bunch of programs, which are essentially our understanding of how the world works, how life works, how we fit into the world, how we fit into life, all of those kinds of things. And then we grow up and we become adults, at least in form, and we are left to navigate the appearance of these programs in our adult lives. And so I'll give you an example, which isn't related to grief, but we'll circle back to grief. When I was a little girl, I grew up in a very religious family where you were like really meant to do things by the book, and not just any book, Jane, but the book, you know what I'm saying? And God could see everything. So if you were messing it up, he was watching and he knew, and that would be revisited upon you. So there was this, you know, real, and neither one of my parents would, you know, champion any of that kind of thing nowadays. But back when I was a young child and my mind was being formed, that was very much all around me. And so I onboarded. I mean, I was like Little Miss Goody Two Shoes. I did everything just right. I was that student in class. I was always well behaved. I was always well mannered. I never spoke when I was not meant to be speaking, you know. And then I grew up to become an adult. And I was faced with this recurring experience of having guilt like crash in upon me around the dumbest things, things that no human should ever feel guilty for. You know, like I ate the last cracker instead of leaving it for someone else. And then like I think about it for 12 days. How could I have eaten the last cracker? Like, I mean, ridiculous. That's how programs work. They're over the top and they often overwhelm us. And so that line, we're never upset for the reasons that we think. I'm not actually upset because I ate the last cracker and it wasn't very kind of me and I should have checked it, blah, 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 all that stuff. I'm not actually upset about that. What I'm upset about is that my program from when I was a little one just got reactivated. And so the way to actually heal through what you go through is that you revisit where it was that the program was formed. And so for many of us as adults, and we have children, and my children have exceptional profiles where they've been diagnosed with different things over the years. I will just tell you, I was a practicing child psychologist for about 20 years, and I missed those diagnoses in my own children, full disclosure. and our children will awaken in us the things that we need to heal. And so when we lean deep into grief and it wasn't supposed to be this way, it was supposed to be another way, we're not upset for the reasons that we think. So where does it come from? Where does the program where we operate on an expectation of disappointment, or we operate on an expectation of it never goes the way that I want for it to go, or this isn't fair, or it wasn't meant to be like this, that comes from somewhere else and it's revisited upon us. The reason that we can all just agree that that's true is you could have, I don't know, there could be, you know, five other moms who end up with children who have very different interests and very different things going on than those moms. And those five other moms might not be impacted by that, but the sixth mom, who happens to be you, might be. And so it's a very personal thing, how we take it on, how we experience it, how we conceptualize it, and how we move through it so that we don't have to be the effect of it.
This is a great conversation. I feel better already. I was getting so down because my daughter wants to go to an agricultural high school, right? She's in grade four, so she's got 2 years to go. And when I looked at that agricultural high school, there is like no buses into the beach. It is out far, far away. And I was like, all of my hopes and dreams will die at this high school. And she's so excited. And I'm like touring it with her, like smiling, like this forced smile. And I was like, I'm going to have a glass of wine later because she's so happy. And I just know that this is the end for the next 10 years. So I love the way that you talk about it because it makes it feel less real. Whereas, you know, the attachments are not as real as I think they are.
Yeah, they're just a little beacon. It's like a little neon sign just blinking in the distance, being like, hey, girl, get over here. This is where the wound is. Like, you can heal this. And who knows? You know, I often talk with the parents that I support about this concept that our feelings are like breadcrumbs and they leave this little breadcrumb trail that we get to follow. And the breadcrumb trail will lead us back to the formative experience, the formative time, the formative event where we onboarded whatever the program is. You know, and if you're going to be, does that mean you're going to be driving like 29 hours a day to get your kid to and from school?
Well, we would have to live up on acreage near the high school, which would make it very, very difficult for me to go to the beach. But I suppose the way that I parent, I would feel like it would be important for me to live near the high school. So then when she makes friends, I'm in the community, I can get to know their parents, and we kind of like in the know. That seemed really important value for me, and I would put that ahead of wanting to go to the beach. But I suppose it's just that level of sacrifice where I'm like, I'm sacrificing a lot here all the time.
Yeah.
But I know that that's best for her. When we were at the event with Maggie, was it you that was talking about the orchid and the daisy?
The orchid and the dandelion. That's me. Yes.
Okay. Well, it was interesting because when we got in the car, I was just quizzing my husband because he doesn't really get involved in the mental health space. And I just wanted his mind to be blown. And he really loved your talk the most. He said to me, you know, about the orchids and the dandelions. And sorry, I should probably let you explain what that is, Vanessa, for anyone who hasn't listened.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't my concept. So full credit to Thomas Boyce, he was once a pediatrician and he became an epidemiologist who studies population level health kinds of things. And his area of interest was, as a pediatrician, he noticed that some children just really struggled. And other children with, you know, the same environment, the same parents, the same whatever, were actually thriving and doing fine. And he wanted to figure out, like, why does that happen? And so he began to explore, and he continues to now to speak and study this particular area of child development, which is sort of looking at, it's a little bit like temperament, and it's embedded in our biology. And the way that he describes it, he actually wrote a book called The Orchid and the Dandelion, Why Some Children Struggle and How All Can Thrive. What he describes is, if you're a dandelion, like, you don't even really have to work at it. You know, like dandelions, you can plant them in a crack in a cement in the sidewalk and forget to water them and they'll be great. My firstborn son was a dandelion. It's great. You know, he had to miss all of last year at university because he got very sick. And I remember feeling like, oh, this is going to be when the mental health crisis happens. Like, you can't take a young man in his prime, you know, studying and living his best life, and then he gets sick and he's bedridden for months on end, and have him come out the other side fine. He's totally fine. He's back at school now. He's doing great. He wrote his first midterm today. He kind of studied for it. I already know he's going to ace it. Like, that's just the kid that he is. So that's what a dandelion is. An orchid, I mean, if you planted an orchid in a crack in the cement in the sidewalk and forgot to water him, it'd be dead within 24 hours. The orchids are like, it's like they twitch in the wind, you know? They need everything to be just so in order for them to thrive and be okay. And of course, that's a continuum. The orchid anchors one end and the dandelion anchors the other, and our children can be kind of anywhere along the continuum. If you have a child who's experiencing exceptionalities like ADHD or other kinds of things, they probably have some element of ORCID in them. And what's fascinating about Thomas Boyce's research is that it's not just like an airy-fairy concept. Like once they figure out how to classify orchids and dandelions, the orchid child on average will, their left eardrum, not their right, their left eardrum will be on average 0.3 degrees, I think it's 0.3 degrees warmer than a dandelion kid's left eardrum. And it's because of like all of the different processes at play as they try to organize their bodies and organize their minds and synchronize their sensory inputs and all of those kinds of things, the just affects the body that way. So it's an actual biological kind of thing that shows up in our kids. So that's what your husband was responding to.
Well, we talk about it all the time. It's such a great way of looking at it because when we got in the car, I said, oh yeah, because you know, we have one orchid. And he goes, no, we don't. We've got two. And we had it reversed because I didn't realize I'm an orchid and I have two orchids. But for me, I think they're daisies because I see what they need, their challenges to be totally normal. I get it. And then for me, I have one that I find tricky to understand, who's very much like my husband. And he said to me, no, you're wrong. I'm the daisy and our son is the daisy and you and the other two are the orchids. And then he put it together and said, well, if we hadn't have had orchids, we could have just stayed at the public school. But we've got two orchids. And this is the sacrifice, I suppose, and the grief that comes in with the high school, because I know that she and he, the two there, are orchids. And if I put them in the wrong spot, in the wrong environment, they die really quick. They go off the side of the cliff. And he said to me, Jane, the problem is that we've got two orchids. He goes, because with the daisy, you can chuck him wherever. And I actually was like, oh my God, he put that together like a boss. I was really impressed.
Well done, husband. Well done. And you know, it's interesting. I am also an orchid and I have one son who's a dandelion, one son who's an orchid. And my orchid son, like when he was second, thank God, because if he had been first, I would not have had a second child. My first son, you know, I was like, well, like, of course he's amazing because I'm a child psychologist. Like, don't you know? And then my second son was born and I was like, what the actual? Like, I am good at this. I know how to do this. Like, look at this other kid. I did great with that one. And now this kid shows up and he just cries. Like he was that kid when he was five, he was growling at people. Like, you know, other parents, we'd be picking his brother up at school and the parents would be like, oh, hi. And he would like bare his teeth and like growl at them. And I was like, oh, like, I promise you, we're very pro-social. We love our children. We're not abusing him. Like, what is the problem here? And I had to, I mean, there was a long path of really getting used to what it was like to have a child who was absolutely marching to the beat of his own drum. And I didn't know what the rhythm was. I didn't know where the drum was. I didn't know where the drumsticks were. Like I didn't know anything about how I was going to navigate that. It was very humbling. It was, I mean, sometimes very amusing and sometimes like devastating because I just felt like, why am I so bad at this? Why can't I crack the code to this kid, you know? And I will tell you, you know, he's 18 now. He graduated high school a few months ago and he's a musician, of course, because he's just got that, you know, in his system. And so he's off to uni to study music and he has landed. Like I think about what he was like at five and I was like, oh, for the love of all things, like we're never going to make it. Like I can't even imagine what this looks like in 10 years time. And what it looks like when an orchid blooms, you're going to sit down because it's going to be so spectacular. It'll knock you right off your feet. And so there is a big process. And for me, that process was a roller coaster ride. There were highs and there were lows and it was wild at times. And when they're really beautifully supported and they're really understood and we as parents can get out of our own way in terms of, you know, the roadblocks that we might throw up with grief and denial and all the other things, if we can get out of our own way and we can just come alongside, realize this is a season. It's not all of life. While still honoring ourselves and not selling ourselves out at the bloom, like just you wait. It's going to be so amazing.
It gives me some hope.
Yeah.
So let's say, for example, my child who wants to go to the agricultural high school. How do I separate like my history that I grew up and we were water skiing and it was all water-based? And my daughter's, I suppose, I call her Bindi. Like she's literally Bindi Irwin to me. Like it's like every day. It's like, I remember bird trauma season. I don't know if you know what that is. No. I didn't know what this is. I've been forced to go to a weekend workshop for wildlife carers. Remember, this is a woman who's never had a dog before. Like I've never even touched a dog and I'm doing wildlife caring. Anyway, yeah. So she wakes up in bird trauma season, which is when basically the weather turns, there's lots of wind and rain and all of the nests come off onto the ground and all the baby birds are left. And she woke up 1st of September and started screaming, it's bird trauma season, because she was so excited. Wow. So, but when I hear her do that and we have to go and search, you know, for curlews to save at the zoo, and I'm thinking it's a beautiful summer's day, could we not go to the beach? Like, how do I separate that from her reality? So I try so hard, but at the end of the day when I'm in the shower, I actually just feel sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And I would offer you two things. The first is, I do think there is a space and a place and a time where as parents, we need to honor who it is that we are. So we don't just completely eviscerate ourselves in order to meet our children's needs and do all the things and be on side with everything that they love and everything that they want to do. That we are continuing to honor who it is that we are, that we're finding time and finding space in our lives in order to deliver on that. And that, even though our children might not always love it, that's actually really good for them because we're modeling for them what it is to be self-referred, which means to take your cues from yourself, not from everybody around you, and also to not be codependers. And I will define codepending as you are not speaking or doing, in your case, water skiing or whatever it is, you aren't speaking or doing your truth for fear of upsetting the other, and then they won't like you or love you. And a lot of us as parents, especially orchid parents, I think we pretzel ourselves trying to make everybody around us happy and keep the peace and don't poke the bear and all of the things. And it's kind of like every time we do that, we take a beach ball and we just push it a little bit further underwater until one day that beach ball like just comes like roaring to the surface and we lose our schmick all over our kids because we hadn't been honoring ourselves. So that's not to say that you're like, kids, you're on your own. Peace out. Mom's going to the beach for the rest of their lives. And it is to say that you will find sometimes where that is the right thing to do. The second piece of that is to really figure out what it is to come alongside who your children are so that you can differentiate between like what's yours to carry and what is theirs to carry. And when you're feeling upset about like, and I'm listening to your bird story and I like, if I had to tell you what my phobias are, I do not like birds. Don't bring them near me. I can look at photos of them and have them be far away. But if I have to like touch them or if they might like flap around me, like I will not be okay. So it's a good thing I didn't get your kid because I would be like, you know what, sweetheart, you're going to have to get a new mom. Like I got to go because I'd be screaming like all the way down the path back to the house. That is just not, it's not going to happen. So
she's in this reptile chat and I hate snakes and she actually signed up and said that we'd have these two pythons. And then yesterday we had to release them. And she's like, Mom, how are we going to get the python out of the container? And I'm like, oh my God, why am I doing this? I told
you to release them. Do you just like put them in your backyard?
Oh, they, these two pythons got run over by a car and so you have to feed them, right? And you have to have them in a safe container with heat for like 2 to 3 weeks so they can basically have food, have a rest and not get eaten or become too weak. And then you have to release them. And she wanted me to drive in the car with them. And I was going, it's just a hard no. So I did like call our neighbor and ask if we could walk onto his property to release these pythons. She's videoing it. And I'm just going, I don't know how this has happened and why I'm here.
So good question, which segues brilliantly to what we do next. So why is this happening and why am I here? And that's where the breadcrumb trail comes into play. And so if you and I were like, if you were a client of mine and we were working through this, I would start to walk you through an experience of making sense of where those feelings come from. And we would do an inquiry process that was created by a woman named Byron Katie, not by me. And we would figure it out. We'd figure out, oh, what's at play here for you? Like, what is it that you're meant to be learning from this? How is it that your child showed up in your life and was like, like with laser precision, was like, this is my mom's thing. Okay, right. So now I'm just going to like figure out, and it's not cognitive. Of course, it's all in the energy of the system. I'm just going to figure out, like, how do I awaken all of her stuff so she gets a chance to heal it? And the other thing is, you don't have to receive the opportunity. I mean, lots of parents, devastating number of parents, are like, I don't want to receive it. And then they just like blinders on and get through life. And for those of us that want to live expansively and want to experience joy as we travel alongside our children in this thing called life, you'll want to crack open the vault and figure out, like, where does it come from? Like, what is it about? Maybe it's about, you know, when does it get to be my turn? When does it get to be about me? Why does it always have to be about everybody else? Maybe that's what it is. And then we figure out, where does it come from? And how can you tend to that within self so that you don't revisit it upon your child? And then you get to decide from a space of what I call being clean, like you've wiped the slate clean. You're not being affected by anything from behind. And so you're able to see clearly what the right call is in this particular situation. And I don't know if you figured it out, Jane, but like, hell no, don't hang with the pythons.
I love everything you've said. I think it's so important. In our Facebook group, it's a part of ADHD Mums I'm the most proud of, because the women in there are so supportive. I don't think I've moderated anything ever. It is amazing, the group. And whenever anyone writes in there anything around, this is what I'm having trouble with. For example, my child won't go to school. I'm struggling to work. Now we don't have any money. And they have a vent, and we have a hashtag vent part to the post. And the amount of people that write things that are just so heavy, and I read it and think, that was validating to read that. And the reason I asked you to do this episode was because there's so many women who will say things like this. Do you think it's normal? Like, how many women do you think feel like this?
I would venture a guess that almost all at some point in time have this kind of an experience sort of course through their being, and they have to make sense of it. I think there are some moms who will be more confronted by it just because of, you know, their constitution and the children that are visited upon them and how those two things blend together or sometimes don't blend together. But I actually think it's far more common than anybody talks about. I think there's a lot of stigma around being a mother and saying like I don't really love that, you know, and that people will think badly of you, that you're not like, oh, my babies, they're so beautiful. My children, they're so amazing. That you can have moments of like, not being terribly down with it. And it doesn't make you a bad person. It actually makes you really normal. I think the more that parents and women are talking about these kinds of experiences and normalizing them, the less we feel shame and guilt about them. And then the more we're able to show up and be present for our children in ways that we wouldn't be able to be if we were drowning in guilt and drowning in grief and drowning in remorse and regret. And so let's talk about it. Let's be out in the open with that, and let's let the sun shine upon it so that people don't need to feel gross about what's really just a very natural part of parenting.
I love everything you've said. If anyone would like to look up more of your work, where would be a good place to start? And I can pop it into the show notes.
Yeah. So Dr. Vanessa LaPointe with an E on the end.com is my website. And I've linked through to like heaps of previous podcast episodes and other things on the website. I'm very active on social media, both Instagram and Facebook, and also over on TikTok. And sometimes, you know, that's like, I'll wake up some mornings and there'll be a parent who has literally hearted 100 of my reels. Like they just sit and go through and consume. And so that can be a gorgeous way just to kind of piece it all together, and it's all free, accessible.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, I can link all of that in. If Vanessa comes back on a tour, I'm going to put it into social media, into the show notes. But thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for your patience with my technological issues to start with.
Always a pleasure to chat with you, Jane. I love what you're doing out in the world. You just keep shining your light very bright.
And you too.
Thank you.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD Mums shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.